Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons, along with my co-host Sam Zordich and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen. Our guest today is Tom Fee from Vector Wealth Management. And our topic today is, it's not business, it's personal. Tom, isn't that kind of backwards?
Well, if there's maybe a clever play on word gets us started this morning or today, that would be great. And you know, is business personal? Absolutely. I mean, the reasons that people start their own business are, you know, pretty broad. It could be an accident or it could be very deliberate.
As you say, sometimes it's an accident. There was an opportunity and the business owner took the opportunity and the next thing they know, 20 years has passed.
That's correct. You know, there's a lot of parts to it. There's emotional reasons for starting a business. There's financial reasons for starting a business. So business is very personal, and we need to make sure that ultimately it's like a friendship that goes away and comes back. It's okay that you separate the business and the personal for a while, but ultimately a good relationship has to come back and be integrated together so that both sides are creating that link between your long-term personal objectives and that of the business. When you're operating from something, and that's where, you know, where in your life do you have the most success? And it's always when you're doing something that you feel passionate about. You know, mm-hmm. There's actually a wonderful book called Flow, and I'm not going to try and pronounce the name of the fellow who wrote it because it's got more vowels and consonants in it than the alphabet. But what he talks about is the psychology of the optimal experience and taking what you do best in your life and then applying that to things as simple as doing the dishes and how it can bring joy to all aspects of your life, not just those areas where you feel passion. Well, when you are passionate about your business, it's almost impossible to fail. You can maybe not you may not grow to the size you want, you may not have the income you want, but you never fail.
Can you truly not fail? I understand on the subjective side, if I'm doing what I love, there's no failure in that.
Correct.
But there, I assume there's got to be financial failure.
Well, there is. It's that you succeed at the level that was possible given all the circumstances at the time. Where the failure can occur is that if you don't look to integrate what you really wanted that passion to do for you besides bring you joy on a daily basis in the work that you do. And so you have to at some point bring it back to how do I make this business work for me after I'm done working for it. And it's an interesting kind of flip that has to occur is that do you own your business or does it own you? And there's a moment where you have to make that transition, and if you can't, then you won't make the best decisions.
And are you really cut out to be a business owner? We've seen a lot of people that are passionate and are fulfilled with what they're doing, but the way they have the model set up, it's just not profitable. So then we try to come in and tweak the model to make sure that its size is scalable and that it's profitable and it can be a means to an end. And I think that's where you're going with this. It's not business, it is personal, because at the end of the day, we have to figure out what's the next phase of life. How are we getting there?
Correct. And again, if you're operating off of your passion, are you passionate about everything in life? Are you passionate about numbers? Are you passionate about art? Are you passionate about selling? Are you passionate about engineering? Well, you can't be passionate in everything. And so what happens is that you've got a lot of you have some complexity there that's outside of your area of passion. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
And Now, what do you have to do? Well, you have to have the time, the energy, the priority to be able to move to this area where you don't have specialization or passion, and then do it well there also. And that's where it's really important, we feel, to try and integrate advisors outside of your area of specialty.
To help you make that stretch?
Correct. Exactly.
You still have to pay the bills. You still have to get through life, and you still have to figure out, you know, what does retirement mean to me? And as Tom says, if there's a missing link, if you aren't integrating business and financial and personal goals, then you're not seeing the big picture.
Correct.
Is that where you're headed?
Exactly. And, you know, I think sometimes to bring it to an example, and if you just said, well, there's a business that has a value of $5.5 million, and they have property that's worth about $1 million, that they have a lease that is between $200,000 and $300,000 a year, and they have outside investment assets of $1.5 million or $2 million. Husband that's 57 and a wife that's 54, and you know, they've got there's a teacher's pension, a small teacher's pension from years before. They've got four kids, elderly parents, three weddings, and they want to buy a place down south. Okay, so with all that information, how do you get that? And you know what it's like, it's in the head, and you know what you want. How do you take all those events or assets or opportunities and integrate them into an understandable fashion that allows you to do the best you can with that?
Like a roadmap?
Yeah, well, yes, like a roadmap. I think, and not to diminish that, because I think that's important, but too often, you know, I think about every third financial flyer you receive from a mutual fund company is either a sailboat or a roadmap, and clearly you have to do that. But I think we don't want to become dulled to the importance of that roadmap. It really is essential to try and understand how everything in your life is going to integrate into what you're trying to get done, and kind of do it with enough time so that you can actually see good results from that integration.
In this particular example that you've given us, you've got a husband, 57, and a wife, 54, and they've accumulated some assets, a business, and the real estate, and so forth. And however they got to this point, they got to their late 50s, and they've accumulated these pieces. Isn't it now about where do you want to go from here, and do we still want all these pieces or not? When do we sell some? Aren't there some really serious decisions to be made in order to determine what's the next phase, and how do I get there, and what do I want?
There are, and you know, it's funny that, you know, probably it's said so often, but it is absolutely true that the worst two things that we can let into our lives in any measurable way is greed and fear. And you know, it's overstated, but yet not stated enough, if you allow me to say that. And so you have to be able to understand way out at the end, what do all these things mean for me? You know, we got to eliminate
maybe
that long-term
fear. What did they mean,
fear.
And what are they going to mean now, and accept the fact that things change?
Correct, and that in 30 years forward with these assets, that I'm okay, or we're okay, we can do this reasonably. And then from that long vision, you go out, you know, and a lot of times people say, oh, I'm 35 years old, why do I need to think about 96? Well, because if you're holding a willow branch in your hand, and you've got the thick end in your palm, and you start to shake it, there's not much movement on in the part that's in your hand, but the end of that willow branch is moving dramatically. So we can have the greatest impact on the long term by making really good short-term decisions. And if you think about it, as we get older, we're just pulling that willow branch towards us, and it's become shorter and shorter, and we've got less flexibility. So when you get the business owners that have done a fantastic job, I mean, if they understood that the case that we just talked about there is less than 2% of all Americans, which would make it less than probably one quarter of 1% of everybody in the world. If they understood what they had accomplished and what opportunities that affords them and how we can execute that reasonably, we can get rid of fear. And once you get rid of fear, and I don't want to overplay it like we've got business owners that are just paralyzed, but this background small hum in the brain that limits us from making really good short-term decisions. Once we can eliminate that through demonstration of the possibilities, Then we can start to say, okay, do you own this asset or does it own you?
Sure. The business owners have been so busy throughout, you know, they might have been in business 25, 30 years and they've accumulated these assets and they bought the building and they did this and they did that. And they're so busy running the business, they really don't see what comes next. And when they have that liquidity event, what have we accumulated? And most of them don't know they've done a really good job of putting money together.
Correct.
But they don't realize it.
Correct.
And then they need...
That's the first time I've heard that. And I'm sitting here going, wow. You know, yes. Wow.
It is. I mean, it's that...
The American dream. Accumulate those assets.
And it's also the American way. I mean, we are such a self-flagellating society. I mean, we're walking around with
Hitler. I'm really getting that.
Yeah. I mean, we do. And that's part of this. Remember when the 70s, when the Time magazine said the Japan, USA, Japan was taking over America. And they had the model that were going to crush us, because I think they bought Rockefeller Center or something like that in New York, and I think those types of things, that type of self evaluation, is what makes this country so great and what creates these opportunities like this. But we will never feel like it's enough, and that's a strength and a weakness.
We could always do better. We could always improve.
Well, I grew up with all of that.
Yeah, right.
Well, and that's
right.
A Midwestern thing. That's huge.
It is, and that's okay. You can. What we want to do is say, just it's okay if you want to take these assets and you want to die with this maximum amount that you can. At the end, your choice, mm-hmm. But just understand that decision so that you're doing it intentionally. Intention's a huge. I love that word. The power of intention is a huge thing in life. Realize what you're doing, why you're doing it, and then go for it. That's okay, mm-hmm. As long as you clearly know the possibilities.
Investigate the options.
Right.
And
yeah.
Make good, solid choices instead of just letting it be an accidental choice is what you're saying.
That's correct.
But most
That's
folks correct. in this category, especially at a 5.3 million in today's, you know, what we've been seeing over the last 10 years, they'd be saying, I don't have any choices. I got four kids and weddings coming up.
But they haven't allowed themselves the choices. They're
right.
Owning a business is 24/7. They've sacrificed over and over again for many, many years. And at some point, they need to understand they have a choice about that, too. Maybe it's time to have that liquidity event, and maybe it's time to consider other lifestyles and the things that they've missed all those years.
Well, and that's kind of the willow branch that you were talking about. I mean, you make a choice here, and you've still got the other end waving in the breeze. How many times do you have to revisit to kind of tweak it so it's a dynamic process?
Oh, it's continually.
Okay.
I don't think you can do it at a young enough age, and as you get older, it becomes much more critical to do so. But the variability becomes less.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of it too is that we're not a generation that's going to be dead at 70. We may be very healthy and operating well into our 80s, and so the opportunities to accumulate or the opportunities to enjoy life are much different. I know that we're aware of our ability to live to a longer age, but I don't think we fully understand the ramifications of that. But what we say to our clients is that, look, at the best 6 years of your life, best 6 years are going to be the next 6 years. So let's get those right. And then after those are gone, let's look at the next 6 years and make sure we get those right. And if it's a business owner who's selling, if they own the building, is that going to be a cash flow situation for the next 5 years that doesn't require any income from the assets that they've accumulated? When do those pensions kick in from TIAA, and how about Social Security? Or, you know, there's all these variables, and we just want to be able to map it out there so that they can say at that point that they're at, that they can transfer that passion that has made them successful in their business into whatever other parts of their lives without having those things that they worked so hard to create for so many years own them.
And what's the plan? A lot of times we get business owners, they'll have the liquidity event, they'll sell the business and collect those proceeds over a five-year period, and then the next thing they do is sell the business, and that takes care of the subsequent five-year period. And after that, then they can take advantage of what other pensions and 401ks and whatever other assets they've accumulated. So it's really about having a plan and controlling your destiny rather than just letting it happen, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, I was just thinking that the business owners that I know, some of them have gone through selling their company and have set up funds for investment purposes for other startup companies. They bought other companies. I mean, it's like they don't. And these are some mid-70s to mid-80s. They're still doing this.
They're serial business owners, just like Sam. She's owned a number of businesses, and she just can't help herself. She just keeps going and going.
Well, they're so cool.
I like to say I've never met an idea I didn't like. You know, okay. If somebody comes in and say, I had this thought, I stick my fingers in my ears, start humming loudly, and run out of the room sometimes.
Oh my goodness.
I read that list too.
That was a great one.
Yeah. I think the joy of this is, you know, it's like putting your light under a basket. I mean, when you get to be those ages, if you've got more to contribute, go for it. When we try and ascertain when a business owner who's transitioning or is going to make some type of radical change in their lives comes in, what we want to test for them is to say that you have this number of your assets allows you to sustain the lifestyle that you've grown up with and you tell us you're comfortable with, but we have an extra 20% of these assets that are available that have no time horizon. They have an infinite time horizon. And if you want to be an angel investor, if you want to go out and do other things, start other businesses, help your kids, whatever, do it with those assets that stand outside of what you've already determined or told us are important for you to sustain your life with a high degree of probability.
Okay.
So you really got to break out of the mold. So many of the business owners are out there doing it year over year over year, and they get their head down, and they're reinvesting in the business, and they're building it, and they're building it, and they're accumulating wealth, and they just don't come up for air.
Well, and then your kids don't want to get into the business.
And now why? What? Because look what it's done to you, Dad. You've been out there working 80 hours a week since I was born. I'm not going to do that. My son's the same way. He says, Dad, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm not doing what you did.
Right. I think there was somebody was at a conference. I think it was at Harvard. And it was a series of second, third generation business, children of business owners. And someone described their circumstances, third generation. And before he could ask the question of the professor, what should I do? He said, sell it. And he said, well, no, I didn't know. Sell it. And we've been involved in the transition of a rather large family business that was in its third generation. And you've got two things working against that. And the first is, because your children are products of both you and your wife, and you are products of two different families, what are the probabilities that their life is going to want to map out exactly what you did? I mean, it's not high.
No.
And then when you place that across two generations and then take the number of grandchildren and all the emotional issues that are around it, it's very difficult to execute multiple generation type businesses. The ones that do it successfully, the Cargills of the world, have unbelievable structures within those families that have rules around it and how you participate, and that's what it takes. And when you can. And even then, if you look at Cargill, they have a tremendous amount of professional outside the family management.
And they have gone outside. I think the problem is, how do you maintain the passion and the sacrifices of the first generation of the founder? They've been out there, and they're building something from scratch, and then usually the second generation doesn't have that passion. Maybe has never worked outside of that family business and really doesn't want to be there.
Right.
And so therefore, how are you going to sustain that?
Correct.
A lot of the old money take their children, and after they've graduated from college, they have them go work for somebody else for 5 or 6 years. And then only then, if they want to join the business, come back into the business, because now they've made an active choice as to whether or not to do that.
That's correct.
But they're allowing their culture to shift, their business model to shift. They're integrating that flexibility in order to continue staying in business.
Right. Right.
But it's a different company now.
Exactly. And, you know, and everybody's circumstances are different. We talked about the business worth almost $5 to $6 million. You've also got the business that might have revenues of $820,000, but it doesn't have a residual value to it. Mm-hmm. That it's a more of a consulting type relationship that you maybe transfer a list of clients, but it was really based on the skill sets of the individuals involved in the business that created that value. And so what does that transition look like? You know, there's some businesses have more opportunities for transition than others. Some businesses are in industries that are growing. Mm-hmm. Others are in ones that are flat.
There's certainly a difference in the enterprise value between a manufacturing business of a proprietary product as opposed to a service business. Service business like mine, what happens to the business if I get hit by the truck tomorrow? Does a business dry up and blow away? Certainly could happen. Hopefully not. I've got some good partners that'll carry on. But when you go to value that type of business, you're probably talking about one-time earnings and an earnout of some kind, a contingent earnout, if you will, as opposed to a manufacturing business that will bring you a big multiple and a fixed price.
Right.
So the types of businesses are dramatically different and can affect your options when you're trying to figure out how to integrate your personal and financial options and your business options.
Well, considering how many personal service or service corps are out there, what would someone in this position do?
I think it's really important to, you know, again, I like to tell the story. If I've told it before, you forgive me because I'm in the middle of my 50s and I get to say it twice without being chastised.
Three times, sometimes.
Yeah, that's it. We got to give ourselves a little latitude here. But, you know, the prejudice that a business owner, whether or the head of a business, whether it's a U.S. bank, saying that we are well positioned against any downturns within the financial services industry, even though other companies aren't, or if it's someone who has a consulting business that generates $800,000 a year in revenues, that says I'm you know, this is really well positioned and I think that this could continue for the next 10 to 15 years. It's important to get outside counsel that challenges those things, not to say that you're wrong, to just do that check, because you have to feel so passionate about this continuation. You need to have someone from the outside as a check and balance to say, you know, well, what about this? What about that? You know, how much do you want to depend on the residual value of a business? What is the value of the revenue streams between now and the end? Can I generate a 15% return by reinvesting my business today? Or am I better off? Are there other alternatives?
Channeling it outside.
Correct. And okay. You always got it. You should always, and you need someone from the outside, even if, you know, one of the things we say to our clients often is, hey, your best opportunity is you. Keep going, man. This thing's growing. Keep investing in this business. Don't start yet. But if we're getting within 5 to 10 years, if you pull off 10% of what you would have reinvested in the past as dry powder so that you're not as dependent on that point where you may transition out of the business, that's just like buying an insurance policy without paying for the middleman.
Here again, time is a critical factor, I would think, because if you have a service business or a consulting practice, it's going to be more important to take some of the earnings from that business and reinvest them or invest them outside of the business than perhaps it would be in a manufacturing business where you can build so much more value and have some larger liquidation event at the end. So that's what you talked about earlier. Do we take some of that money and invest it as we go, or do we pile that money back into the business because you're going to get a bigger multiple for that at the time that you go sell?
And that's so much individualized. You know, to say that the best solution is to put it into the stock market, especially after the way it's been acting lately. But you know, where is my greatest opportunity for return? And it's just business by business. What do you do when you talk about the potential for using some of the resources of the business to create a lack or a less of a dependence on the residual value of the business when you go to sell it in whatever form. Now you've got the value of the business, the value of the building, if there's a building, any Social Security, you got pensions, and now you've got outside assets as well as maybe a cabin or whatever else. You've just added to the complexity of a very complex, already complex situation that you have to be able to see it. You have to be able to visualize all these variables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we say to our clients is that we're trying to act, and I think investment advisors have a responsibility to act as like a CFO of their personal financial business. Let's try and integrate these things and look at all the possibilities. If you're going to execute a good business plan, then you have to kind of know what all the variables are and what their possible impact is on that business. And inevitably,
what are the trade-offs?
Correct. And we are in a transition.
This is really about a shift from active, ordinary income to creating passive income so that you can get away from working full-time and then go to something else that you enjoy and live off of that passive income. So it's a question of how do we develop enough passive income so that we can go do that?
I think we just had a Vulcan mind meld from Star Trek. I'm not sure because it's a little scary because you said shift and I said transition. And what you're morphing your life's work as your life moves forward. And you know, the human nature is to believe that where we are is where we're always going to be. It's a huge force, you know, and that, you know, for instance, even today's economy, we haven't seen this exactly, but we've been here before. And so we will move past this. The reasons we got into it are different than the reasons in the past. The reasons we'll get out of it will be different from the reasons in the past. But the force of capitalism will drive us out of this because human nature is going not, you know, everybody
we
is
don't
going
stop.
To, yeah, we don't stop. Each day we're going out there and doing it. But it's but
the sooner we can have these discussions, the more flexibility you can have and the more impact you can have on the outcome.
Exactly, exactly.
So start as early, the day before you start your business, start talking about what are you going to do with it and who are you going to sell it to and when.
And look at it personally. That's what I'm getting. Look at it personally so it doesn't own you.
That's correct. Business is personal, and make sure that when you look at the registration of ownership, that your name's on the top.
Well, that's about all the time we have for today. So I'm Tom Lyons for my co-host Sam Zordich, our producer Jorgi Jorgensen, and our guest Tom Fee from Vector Wealth Management. Thank you for tuning in to todaysbusinessradio.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.